Roger Tulsis is a Los Angeles private investigator specializing in electronic countermeasures. In the past 30 years, he has swept more than 2,500 locations for electronic bugs and wiretaps. In recent years, his business has included helping victims of electronic harassment and mind control. Electronic harassment takes place if someone uses any electronic device to aid them in invading your person or property for the purpose of gathering information illegally or for the purpose of causing any physical harm. Mr. Tulsis uses more than $100,000 worth of high-tech equipment to try to identify the sources of electronic harassment. He's our special guest tonight on Coast to Coast. Roger, welcome back. How are you?
Hi, George. Good to be back on the waves with you.
Well, you know what? And we couldn't pick a better time to get you back on with everything that's going around this planet right now.
Oh, boy. You know, I just got to finish watching an ABC special called No Place to Hide. It was a one-hour show on surveillance and data mining. What a preface for our show tonight for those people that had just come off ABC and watched all this detail of this data mining and all this corporate database stuff that's going on. Unbelievable.
You know, with this electronic harassment and spying, basically, do we have as a nation, Roger, the kind of equipment to monitor our borders without having to worry about putting somebody every 200 feet?
Well, you know, there is a lot of, let's put it this way. With the computer power that we've got now, not only are they monitoring everybody's bank account and all the transactions and your credit reports and all those details, they're unleashing all this computer power, especially if you had watched this one special. They were talking about this one database that takes all the trivious information and tries to connect it by using these special forms of logic to find connections between individuals. If they can go through the detail of unleashing that kind of computer power on monitoring everybody's finances, there's no reason why with ground sensors and with satellites and with night vision equipment that we can't get the borders done. You know, of course, you know, the thing about it that always amazed me is that they had military, United States military, on the borders of Germany during the Cold War, separating, protecting in a tripwire situation if there had been some, you know, activity from the Russians. We have had troops on those borders.
Right, and doing a thorough job, too, I might add.
Yeah, well, they were on there for 45 years or more.
Yeah.
So I don't quite understand why there's the difficulty with the borders of America.
In your field, there are two things really going on. One has to do with, of course, new developments in mind control and what technology is doing in that direction, and then the electronic harassment and spying. So there's a lot to talk with you about today. What do you want to start with?
George, I want everybody that's got a computer to man their battle stations and get ready to go up on the net, because we've got some special pages that I put up just for the show, because the last show that you and I did was June 12th of 03.
Right.
So it's been about a year and a half. And it's interesting because I had listened to our show that we did back then last night just to see what had happened since then. And some of the things that you and I were speculating about have now come to fruition. And I'm going to show you on some special pages we put together for this update show, we can look at some of these developments that have taken place.
And do you also remember some of the strange calls we got, Roger, people who were hearing voices electronically or through their fans and things like that? Do you remember that?
Yeah, well, voice-to-skull technology, as we talked about at that time, the patent for that is on my website. And, of course, I get calls from people all the time that are hearing voices. And that's increased as well. But the interesting thing about it, as you'll see when we get to this first page on the net, is that a lot of this newest level mind control development is not taking place inside of secret research facilities inside the Pentagon, and it's not in secret research facilities of subcontractors. It's going on in universities around America.
All over the place. And Lex has made it very easy, what we've done, to go right to your website in these articles in question, Roger, when you're ready, is people just go to the coasttocoastam.com website. Right under Roger's name, it says Tulsis Media. You'll be able to click on the various aspects of what he talks about. If he talks about mind control, you click that. If he talks about electronic harassment, you click that, and it goes right to his website.
Okay.
So you don't have to worry about typing in the entire website.
All right. Well, let's steer ourselves to the pages that we had set up that's for new development. And this particular page is called Tapping the Power of the Brain. Now, I can just take you through it by getting to the electronic harassment page.
Okay.
And we can, if you're just going to plain go to the opening page of the website, once you get there, you'll see all the machines that we use to do the investigations that we do. And then once we get on that page, when you get halfway down the middle of the page, there's still that vibrating box that says electronic harassment. So when you're, why don't I just take you through it? Are you?
Okay, we'll go that way. So that would be just get on to bugsweeps.com first.
Yeah, I was just going to take us that way because I haven't seen the postings up on the net, and I'm not sure the URLs are going to be as clear to
okay,
get.
Okay, yeah, because what we've got direct links to the heading electronic harassment, those articles, and also the.
The one that ends with brain-power-tap?
We've got the scientist gingerly tapping the brain's powers, an article on that.
That is where we're going to start.
Okay, we'll start with that one. And you want us to go straight to that article?
Yeah, just go straight to that article if you don't have to route it. I was basically going to take you through the harassment page. And if anybody ends up at the harassment page, if they go up to the top, we put a coast-to-coast little logo up there, and it basically says at the top that it'll link to the new latest information.
Great. So this is the one that says Mind Control right under Tulsis Media, and it'll take you straight to it. And I am there now, Roger.
Okay. So you should basically see at the top there, Tapping the Power of the Brain.
Yep.
And then
yep.
the article starts, Scientists Gingerly Tap into the Brain's Power.
Okay.
Now, you might recall when we were having our last conversation, we made reference to the movie The Matrix. And in The Matrix, the individuals had interface connections in the back of their neck.
Mm-hmm.
Well, basically what they've accomplished here at this research in this one particular university, and so this one here is done in Brown and Rutgers. Here's the diagrams of how they have taken an individual, and what they're doing in these particular cases, they're working with people that are paralyzed, and they're quadriplegics. And what they do is they open their skulls up. And if we go to number one illustration, you'll see a picture of an individual's head that's been kind of split, so you can see the interface connection.
Yep.
And the interesting thing is my web guy that puts this stuff together, his name is Alan, he calls this thing a brain tap.
He really, and it's not too graphic, people, so don't worry about that.
Yeah. Anyway, there's two important pictures there. First of all, there's just diagram of how they've installed an interface into this individual, right into this individual's skull. And then what they did is they actually drilled through the bone of his skull and got to the cortex of the brain, and then they installed this interface chip, which is right where it says how it works. And then to give you the scale, they show a picture of a contact lens. Now, this particular interface chip is basically a spike device that contains 100 electrodes, and it is actually placed into the surface, puncturing into the brain. And if we go on to the next picture that's
And I guess they pop it in the brain right at the right spot, I guess, right?
Exactly. They stick it right in the control center for, and I think it explains a little bit as we get to the next page here, that as it goes down, as each one of these little spikes go down, if you look at number two,
okay.
You'll see the sensor as it goes down into the brain surface, and it's right in the neuron area of that particular section of the brain.
Right, okay.
And this is the
That's
part
amazing.
Of the brain, and this is the part of the brain that does have some of these controls that allows what their intent here, of course, is to try to get these people to regain their muscle control. But in fact, what they're doing here, and their success so far has been, is they have made a computer interface connection whereby the individual at this time can play the game of Pong. That's pretty spectacular when you think
about
it.
It sure is. Now, this device, is that sticking right out of his head?
That's the interface. If we go back to picture number one, you can see that little screw connector. And basically what the screw connector does is it goes through a little piece of cabling that takes 100 conductors and moves that into the chip itself. And then the chip spikes then go into the brain area.
And I would presume that in order to be able to function, so what if you got a 1 or 2 inch thing sticking out of your head, right?
Well, these people, of course, are paralyzed.
Yeah, they don't care.
They're just hoping to improve their life
quality. Absolutely. Okay.
But the interesting part of this, now, what I find amazing about this thing, not only is it's not being done in some dark research lab in some secret location, it's being done at Brown University. But notice that if you read the article, it's completely funded by the military, the Defense Department,
mm-hmm.
DARPA, the Defense Advanced Research Projects Agency. And it even says in the article, if we go down a little more, that their intent on this thing is to be able to make military interfaces whereby things like pilots and other people running battle kind of weapons can have direct control, you know, thought process control over these
machines,
technologies,
right,
that they're going to be operating at high speed.
Almost like cyborgs, where people may say, let's assume they're in a plane, rather than holding the controls, you would just think, you know, bank left, bank right, and you would.
Yeah, and at the speed of thought.
At the speed of thought.
Yeah.
That's right.
So it says right here that the DARPA envisions the day when a fighter pilot, for instance, might operate some controls just by thinking. And they say that the DMI field is about to explode. And it's also at Duke University. And the interesting thing, like I was saying, if you look at the list of universities that's on this, just in these articles here, you got Brown University, you have Duke University, you have the University of Pennsylvania, Washington University of St. Louis, and State University of New York. And these are the ones that are just doing this particular small piece of research. So one of the things that's been very interesting to me is that a lot of the people that have been contacting us over the last year or so are students at universities that are telling us that they're hearing voices.
Wait a minute now. The people in the university, students, right?
We have students calling us up and saying, we are having problems because we are hearing voices and we feel like somebody's experimenting.
Interesting. And so these students have no direct relationship with the research, but they happen to be going to that school, that university.
Some do and some don't.
Okay.
But the point is that there's a lot more young people that are popping up right now that are hearing voices. So my sense of it is just that this is what they published here is just one aspect of the mind control, brain interface, directed energy towards mental control that's going on in these locations.
Now, on one side, Roger, one would think it's got tremendous upside. I mean, to help someone who's a quadriplegic and allow them from their wheelchair to be able to move computers and play games and maybe even write and do things.
Right, writing and controlling wheelchairs. That's exactly. But the point is, if that's the case, why isn't this being funded by medical money?
Sure.
It's not being funded by medical money. It's being Department of Defense funded, and that's the thing about it that I find is particularly...
One would assume, then, that there's more of a sinister purpose for this.
Well, you know, you got to look at it at face value. Obviously, there's going to be some great stuff coming out of it, but, you know, we're still dealing with this 1984 kind of mentality. And once again, this whole thing that everybody needs to give up their freedoms and rights based on the fact that we've got, terrorists among us and we don't know where they are. We'll get into that more later. I don't want it to get too far away from finishing up this very interesting article.
Yeah.
Now, if we move down to the second part of this, and of course, everybody can take a lot of time and read all the details.
Okay, and those who don't have computers, just make sure we're helping them out, okay?
Sure.
Those people who are driving or in trucks or something like that.
Yeah, okay. Hopefully we're given enough description on these first few pictures so people understand that basically there's an individual sitting in a wheelchair that's looking at a computer screen, and he's playing Pong with his brain. And they've got it to the point now where these people are 70% accurate in the game. And from the old days of playing Pong, you know, that as that little puck speeds up, it's not that easy to do, you know?
I was going to say, I wasn't even good with my hands doing Pong.
Yeah.
I mean, here they are, 70% accurate, just by thinking.
Well, they say in the article that that these people practice several times a week with specialists. But the other interesting thing, obviously, is the software. Now they've got the software operating, and these individuals get a chance to interface and show their skills. I'm almost sure what's happening is that the software is writing itself. You know, they have this kind of software which actually it writes its own code as
mm-hmm.
it learns. And my sense of it is that that's probably what's happening right now. And, of course, that means that there's big things that are going to happen very quickly. When you get computers and software start to write its own software and computers design themselves, that's what's given us this logarithmic acceleration in computers and all this surveillance kind of stuff.
Absolutely.
Let's run on to the next one. Now, there's one other photograph there, and that's the individual that's the this John Donahue.
The scientist. Okay.
He's the founder of this CyberKinetics, which is the company that is leading the research, and he's holding the little interface chip there over a picture of the brain.
It's like a little thumbtack, he says.
It's exactly what it looks like, but it's got 100 little connections that connect into your brain. And, of course, they say in the article that that's just a very simple interface because when you get down to the details of how many, that, as an example, they say there's 100,000 neurons in a square millimeter of cortex. So it's a lot more dense, and they're going to have to make much more finite interfaces. But this is a pretty big breakthrough. And, of course, they're just telling us, you know, what we're reading about here, they may be quite a bit further along this kind of stuff when they release this kind of stuff. It's usually, you know, months behind. I would be surprised if they haven't advanced considerably versus the article here. And I think the article is a December, this is an October.
Says that they've lost 6 million to date, and that was based on whenever this photograph of him was taken. They're continuing. He says they need $40 to $50 million to continue operating for the next 3 to 5 years.
Yeah, well, that's drop in the bucket when you consider the billions that that's being spent.
Yeah,
we have learned from some of the people that move in the shadows that there's more money being spent on developing mind control weapons and and other kinds of projects that will end up obsoleting both guns and bombs. The whole idea is to completely remove those kind of weapons from the battlefield and move completely with mind control weapons so that, you know, the opposing force loses the ability to think on the battlefield,
right,
has no interest in aggression, and there's more money being spent on that than was spent on the atomic, the Manhattan Project.
This is going so quickly. This is just so amazing how fast it is progressing. I mean, to think that a sensor, a little chip, can interface with the brain merely by sticking it into the brain in a certain area, letting those sensors touch the neurons.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just incredible.
Well, the incredible part is that there's a computer software that can take that information and actually make it function.
And make it work.
Yeah, I think that's the magic part of the formula right there. Now, the next section here, brain power, device for the paralyzed, turns thinking into doing. This is a little bit different. This is a non-invasive headset. If we go down to the first pictures that are there that says brain power, it says scientists have developed a non-surgical way.
It's a skull cap, right?
Exactly. People to control computer cursor using only the brain waves. So this is more of an EEG kind of interface. And the user thinks of moving a computer cursor, and the electrode cap registers the brain's electrical signals.
Is it as accurate, Roger, as the invasive portion of this, where they operate on the brain?
I don't think it would be at this point. My sense of it is that we may end up just like those guys in the Matrix, where people were comfortable having these interface connectors. You know, it's funny because you look at the kids these days that are piercing their tongues and piercing their noses and all this other stuff.
Sure.
My sense of it is those people probably would be not too uncomfortable with some kind of computer interface
in their brain,
in the back of their neck.
It's probably the thing to have.
Well, hey, I think, you know, I'm just saying, by judging the what people think is fashion in terms of the young kids today, they may not, you know, you're not going to say, how do you like my new interface? You know, it's gold studded.
Stay with us, Roger. We'll continue up with this article and talk about some other things right here, including electronic harassment. Are you hearing voices? Maybe you really are. I'm George Norrie, back in a moment, right here on Coast to Coast AM with our guest tonight, Roger Tulsis. And his website, by the way, linked up with his name, bugsweeps.com. Roger, this fast blast into us from an individual in Washington. He says, I'm a guy, I had my ears pierced, stretched 2 times, but as far as a gap, inserting something into my head, If God wanted us to be part robot, he would have made us this way. So there's one who probably won't do it.
Yeah, you know, but the discussion that we had last time, which is worth repeating, is in this world where everybody's so competitive in the workplace and that kind of thing, if I was to say to you as a working individual that if you would have an intelligence acceleration by having an interface connection so that when you went to work, you could interface your brain, you could have super high-speed performance, instantaneous ability to pull information, be able to do interface processing to accelerate your whole productivity, to get kind of a super intelligence level. How many younger people that are competitive in the worst in the workplace would take that because they just didn't want to be left behind?
Well, and Roger, what about this possibility? What if... Look at this application. You know, one of my weak points in high school was geometry. It took me a long time to understand it. I was great at the sciences and everything else, but geometry I had a tough time with. What if there was software for geometry that you plugged in straight to your brain, downloaded it? Would your brain assimilate that? And you would instantaneously know everything about geometry. You might not know how in the heck did this happen, but you'd know everything. Is that going to be possible?
I don't see why not. The reason being is that when you look at what happens as we now have gone from our individual PCs in a home and we entered into a network, into the internet, now we are able to download information on demand, instantaneously, anything you want to know, including software that allows you to go ahead and do accelerated processes on your own. In other words, we can download the program and then enter our own parameters and have things operate productively from that point forward with the software that we've just taken from the internet. So from the basic architecture of the way the internet operates and basically networks being a two-way exchange of data, my expectation would be that that's exactly what will happen.
I still think, too, what will happen, and this is my prediction, even though some scientists have come on this program and they don't think this is possible, I think they're going to be able to download memory from your brain onto a chip. You get cloned, and then they're going to take that downloaded memory from that computer and put it back into your brain, and all of a sudden, you've got this young body with all this same memory and knowledge. Mm-hmm. You'll live forever.
Well, you had a futurist on last week. I forget which fellow it was, but that's exactly what he was talking about, is the man-machine merge. That would be the next evolutionary step, and that's a little scary for me. But, the interesting point is that if, in fact, we could get this interface, if you recall from the Matrix movie, because, you know, I think the Matrix movie is very astute in terms of trying to assimilate what the meaningfulness is of all this kind of stuff, because those people left their bodies, became pure energy, and projected themselves through cyberspace.
Exactly.
And so once you're pure energy, you know, then travel at the speed of light really does give you the ability to move around the universe. And, of course, that's something that most people that believe that advanced civilizations and UFOs have had that capability for some time. It may be very well that if we are able to do this where we are interfacing brain function and enabling brain to move into a electromagnetic entity, even on a temporary basis, kind of like the Matrix, they were laying there. They were still biologically alive, but they were able to take their psyche and move it electronically. And then, if they beam you in an antenna out in outer space, then you could be traveling great distances in very short periods of time.
Can you imagine where we will be at 100 years from now?
Well, yeah, but the interesting part about it is we're looking at the Model T right here. You understand what we're looking at?
Exactly.
This is it. This is the Model T just rolling off a Ford's assembly line. And it's not like everybody's standing there and wanting one, but the point is if it will do some of these things that the futurists think they will do, there's going to be nothing stopping.
When did the Model T come out? What year? Do
Probably
we know?
About early 1900s, I think.
Yeah, I want to get the date, because from that point to 1969, we went from that to landing a man on the moon, maybe 50 years.
Yeah,
I
think aviation is even a stronger illustration of that when you consider Kitty Hawk and how far they came from that particular date, when just barely being able to get off the ground and then going to the moon. It's amazing. But of course,
1918 The Model T.
Is that right?
Yep. So in 50 years, 51 years, we went from the Model T to putting a man on the moon. That's in 51 years. Can you imagine what they will do in the next 50 years?
Well, the thing about it is the computers themselves are designing themselves now. We took that huge leap. I think you and I talked about UFO crash over there in Roswell and all those pieces, advanced technologies that were given to the
companies
we stole these from the Russian, that Colonel Corso, the intelligence officer, mm-hmm. that got the file cabinet full of the parts from that thing,
yep.
and of course that took the leap, you know, with the microprocessors and fiber optics and advanced materials. Okay, let's finish up with this page. Basically, it's just one other thing in there. On the second interface, which is non-invasive and works on an EEG basis, the other thing they said that was quite interesting, it says the computer software for that particular design is designed to adapt to the patient's increasing ability to move the cursor. So what that means to me is this is self-writing software that will interface it with the skills of the individual that's trying to develop these signals, and it's adapting itself and writing itself as time goes along, kind of like interfacing between the person's capability and the machine itself.
You know sometimes, though, how difficult it is to control your thoughts, right? I mean, if you had, for example, the ability to think, I'm going to kill this person. Now, even though you don't want to do it and you're kidding, you might have that dangerous thought come into your brain, and heaven forbid, all of a sudden this person dies. How could something like this go crazy when you think about something? Is it possible that it could go haywire because these bizarre thoughts enter one's brain?
Yeah, do you remember Forbidden Planet?
Yes.
The creatures from the id?
Yep.
And
yep.
Where they actually were on the brain booster, and once they had that amplification, their imagination
went wild.
Took physical form and started the killing the people on the Bellerophon expedition. That's a great movie. That was a really good old sci-fi movie,
uh-huh.
And it was one of the ones that. As a matter of fact, it was funny because I was working back in 1968, I was working in this in Beverly Hills, and Walter Pidgeon came in. You know, he was the star of that movie.
Oh, sure, that's right.
And I said, you know, gee, I love that sci-fi movie. He said, you know, my whole career I did all these other movies, but all the kids know that movie, you know. He was a little frustrated because all the young people only knew Forbidden Planet. But it was a classic, and he was a terrific actor. But basically, that's it, Creatures from the It. And that you can write a whole Frankenstein scenario with what's going to happen when people harness this kind of mental power and have the ability to project.
Or you know, you're flying a plane and all of a sudden you start thinking about something else. How do you concentrate back on that? There is a danger to this.
I'm sure. Well, there's a lot of dangers in a lot of different ways because we're just talking about the positive aspects of this thing. But what happens when you are a individual that's caught and wants to be interrogated, and they take you in and plug you into one of these things and start to use the internal technologies to download your mental capacities.
The interesting way to find out if somebody's guilty or not.
Well, you know, that's the dark side of this stuff, and that's what's a little worrisome about the fact that it's all being funded by military money.
Will they also get to the point, like Hollywood, where they hook you up in your brain, and then your mind, your memory, your thoughts get illustrated on a screen?
You know, that was another one. Brain, what was the name of that movie that with Natalie Wood that was Brain... where they were exactly what they were doing. They were hooking their brains up to a machine, and they were able to play a kind of a tape, and you would have the realistic experience. What was the name of that? Was it Brain Scan or
Brainstorm?
Brainstorm. That's the one. Yeah, that was another terrific picture on that subject matter of that the brain interface and being able to record people's thoughts and play thoughts back. So
I think somebody feeds Hollywood this stuff out of universities or something.
It's hard to say, but you know these things are all conceptualizations that tend to be real somewhere along the line. These people that write this stuff are especially these futurists. And the fellow that was on the other night, was it with you, George?
It was
Art?
With Art, Ray Kurzweil, I think.
Kurzweil, yeah. This fellow was fascinating. I really enjoyed that show, and he was talking specifically about some of these potentials, and boy, I'll tell you. Let's go ahead and look at the electronic harassment pages now. So we're going to back down to the one that says electronic harassment, HTML. And
go to the Coast website, right under your name. It says electronic harassment. Click that. And there you are with this article.
Okay, so this one should say electronic harassment in the header, and then it says, you know, what's electronic harassment, and gives you the Okay, we know that part. We can just cover it just briefly, in the sense that electronic harassment is when somebody uses an electronic device to aid them in invading your person or property for the purpose of gathering information illegally for the purpose of causing harm. And there's all these different descriptions there. We have electronic surveillance and sabotage and jamming and directful harmful energy devices, followed by a couple of pictures of some. This is a microwave rifle, the top one, which has a substantial amount of power. That's a 50,000-watt microwave rifle, and that's a kit that you can pick up off the Internet.
That's crazy.
Just for people that say these things don't exist. And then under that, there's a should be a picture of a modified microwave oven, and this is a picture of a device that actually was involved with a case where people were attempting to get their neighbors to move out because they wanted to take over their condo, and they had a son that was involved in the physics lab, and he made this microwave oven. Now this thing stripped down. This is a food heating oven. Is the original intent of this thing.
It was a real microwave oven.
800-watt microwave oven. And he ended up blasting it through the walls to try to get rid of these people, and we have a little diagram down there that shows exactly what it looked like. Here's an individual standing with this modified microwave oven.
Holding it right against the wall.
Holding it right against the wall, and then and most walls and most condos and places like that are just, you know, wallboard. There isn't anything that's going to stop.
Yeah, maybe it's 6 inches thick, 8 inches, but you're right. There's not much in between.
Right. And so the first person over that happens to be in the first room is going to get a real serious dose. And, as you get further away from the source of the energy, the dosage is going to drop.
And it's silent, right, generally?
Absolutely silent. Absolutely.
Did this really occur then?
Yes, it did.
Did they get them to move?
An actual case. Well, these people started to get deathly ill. And that's when people came in, like myself, and made some measurements and found out what was going on. And then these people were apprehended. But the whole thing was quieted down, and they didn't want it to make the papers because they really didn't want.
When the measurements were being taken, were the was the microwave being used at that time? And you're saying, hey, something's going on, and it looks like it's next door.
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly how it went. And then these people had. Basically, microwave ovens operated 2.4 gigahertz, and these people had spectrum reading equipment, and then the signal just went off the top.
How long was this guy bombarding them?
For a period of months. I mean, these people got deathly ill and had some of these symptoms that we'll go over in the bottom of the page. So let's continue on down here because we've got a lot of stuff to cover here. In our last discussion, last time, we were talking about this new weapon that they're using on the battlefield, and it's called Active Denial. And this is a little diagram of it, where it's basically on a Humvee, and it's a microwave generating system with an antenna, and they aim it at opposing troops. And this particular setup was to just burn people at a distance, raising their skin temperature to the temperature of 130 degrees, giving them pain. And you and I had that discussion last time that, you know, what happens if you and I as Americans decide to go to the street and use our First Amendment rights to have a rally against some government something we oppose and have the right to do that, and one of these things show up and starts blasting everybody out there. And, of course, this was the original intent of this thing, was to just, burn people and make them run. But since then, actually what we've been finding out is that they're much more interested in causing changes rather than burning people and causing changes in their mental capacities. We don't want to go out and burn people on this non-lethal weapon stuff. They really just want people to be unable to fight.
They want you down to your knees, don't they?
Well, either running. Just feeling so unable and unaggressive to do anything, disoriented. Or what happens if you go out to the battlefield and you send out microwave information that makes individuals hear voices in their head that says that this is Allah, this is God, And it is no
good point.
There's no reason to fight the Americans and this kind of thing and that kind of thing.
That's right. Go away, stop, whatever, yeah.
And basically what I was saying before was that you really don't want to, you want to get away from these bombs and weapons, because what good is it to go and take over a place if you level it?
This device is up and running now, isn't it?
It is. It's been up and running for the, when you and I had last talked.
Do we know if it's been used in combat?
I don't know if it used, but my guess is it probably certainly has been tested out there.
Yeah, but they've been pretty quiet about it then.
Yeah, that's right. And another interesting thing that came across the internet, and you know, I don't know whether it's accurate or not, but this is what I got. It said it has come out recently that George Bush himself is hearing voices in his head. In one good example, he was sitting in a quiet room with other cabinet members looking over a document, and looked up and said in an irritated way, "Please just let me finish first." But no one had said a word. He was hearing voices in his head, and Bush says that he hears the voice of God telling him what to do.
Now that's strange.
Well, I don't know. Did you see the
Manchurian Candidate?
Yeah. Well, that
you mean the second, the new one with Denzel Washington?
Yeah, the new one, right.
Yeah, it's a good movie.
It was, and of course that really amplified this whole point of implants and their abilities to do that. But,
well, we're going to get into that next hour with you as well, because there's some strange things with implants.
Yeah, and you know something, we've had a lot more people show up with implants since I've talked to you last. There's been a lot of people.
And they have no idea where they got them,
you know,
right?
Most of them don't, and they may even try to call in tonight. I had a few people saying that they did want to express.
And these are just general Americans, or are they in some specific field?
Most of them are, you know, most of them are fairly average people, but some of them have all had some kind of conflicts in the past with the powers that be, most of them.
Roger, tell me a little bit about these cell towers that are all over the place.
Well, that's the next thing I wanted to look at. Do you see this picture that you've got right here? It says, guess what's hiding inside the steeple? It's right under the...
the church, sure.
Click on that for a minute.
Okay.
And what you're going to see open up is a picture of what these are concealment cell phone antennas.
You mean the flagpole and all these things?
Everything that
the
you're
cross.
Looking, okay. Everything that you're looking at there is a real cell phone concealment.
Now, are they doing that for aesthetics?
They're doing it for several reasons, aesthetics and to be able to sell to the different towns that we're going to put these cell sites right smack in the middle of everything, and we're going to make them so that they're not apparent.
Uh-huh.
But the problem is that this matrix is now covering everywhere.
Right, and we're getting bombarded.
We're getting bombarded. As a matter of fact, I was hoping I wouldn't get one myself, but I've got one that just went up about a long block from my own location.
And they rent these spaces, I guess, from the... Because there's a real church there, right?
That's exactly what happens. It's amazing that a church would do that, but, you know, they're paying about $1,000 a month.
So they take the cash.
And yeah. People take the cash. But the problem is that you've got all this power that's coming up and having this effect on everybody's biosystem. And one of the things that I wanted to talk about was this recent case that I had. There is a lady that is one of your listeners. And she contacted me after we had you had replayed the Art Bell show that I did just before Christmas.
You did that on November 16th.
Right, yeah. And you guys replayed it, I guess, about 2 weeks before Christmas.
Right.
And
right.
The funny part is that you didn't tell me, and we had just come back from work.
Oh, you got bombarded.
Well, we had come back where you'd worked all Sunday at a corporation. And we came back pooped, and then by 6 o'clock in the morning, the phones were ringing from Texas and New York, and the emails, 100 emails a day for like 2 straight weeks, and 280,000 hits on the website.
And you're going, what happened?
Jesus, you guys need warning labels.
Yeah,
you know?
We do. Hey, stay with us, Roger. We'll finish. Roger, some people are emailing me saying that the cell phone towers are even coming in the form of trees and fake branches.
Yeah, that's exactly what they did. They put down the block from where I live, they put one up, and it's a phony palm tree. I mean, the whole bottom of the thing has the texture, you know, of a palm tree, and then up on the top is all these long green branches. And it's a standard six element cell site with the full power let me explain to you what happened on this last case that I was telling you
okay,
about.
Okay, yeah.
When we had one of your listeners, a lady named Frida, and she contacted us from Colorado Springs saying that she was having problems. Now this lady is a researcher in life extension. and she's somewhat of an expert with vitamins and other kind of supplements. She's a student of trying to put the body in harmony with these kind of nutritions.
Holistic,
yeah. So we went over there, and one of the things that was happening to her was that about 5 o'clock in the morning, she would be laying in bed, and her heart would speed up, and she'd get an anxiety attack, and she would be unable to be restful anymore. So when we got to her location, we set up our spectrum analyzing equipment. And when I looked out over the hill where she lived, because she had, it was in a very nice area, when you looked across the valley, there was 3 massive cell antennas. And when you powered up our analyzing system, you could see that during the hours of 5 o'clock in the morning when all these people started to merge on the freeway, these cell antennas would go from a low capacity of very small signal levels coming out to a gigantic amount of power. You were talking probably about 100 to 200 transmitting carriers broadcasting simultaneously. So all that power summates when you're talking about hundreds of conversations. And it's not so much the power that's coming off individual cell phones. In other words, you know, when you have a cell phone to your ear, those power levels are not, I mean, they're not good for your brain.
No.
But they're not going to hit somebody that's a mile and a half away.
That's right.
But if you have 3 cell system antennas, each one of them broadcasting with wattage involved in 100 different conversations, all being digitally pulsed, you find that what happens is that you start, your brain functions start to be interfered with. Now, if you add to that that most people sleep on a mattress. Now, if you look on the inside of a standard mattress, what you see is springs.
Metal springs.
And what's connecting the springs is these little metal tie pieces.
You sound like you're doing a commercial for my Select Comfort client now,
well,
because they sleep on air.
Well, there you go. Because what we're finding is that the people that are suffering these kind of occurrences, where at 5 o'clock in the morning, 6 o'clock in the morning, the cell systems power up, and people are having anxiety attacks and some of these other symptoms that we're going to be looking at. What we're finding is that the people are sleeping on metal beds. If you look at the size of an antenna array that would be equivalent to a mattress, you're talking about an antenna that would be on a battleship. I mean, you're talking about 8 foot by, what, 6 foot that's or a, 4 foot across?
That's a big mama.
Well, just think about it for a second. That's an ungrounded metal array, and any kind of electromagnetic fields that going to hit it. In other words, I can take my spectrum analyzer and I can put it up to your bed, and you'll see all the signals take a big jump up, just because it's a large metal array. And then you add a box spring metal as well, then you're really going to have, you know, the whole thing's a gigantic...
It's a receiver.
It's a receiving system,
yeah.
Right. So what we did with this lady was that we have this... Originally, when I had talked to you a year and a half ago, we were using microwave-absorbing foam that was used in the military applications,
right,
for absorbing microwaves. We have since moved away from that because the foam tended to flake and we didn't want people to breathe it. So we've moved into what's known as metallized fabric. And this is a special fabric that's kind of like normal fabric. It flexes and it's comfortable. And it's a nickel copper plated non-woven fabric. And this is specifically made to reflect and absorb microwave.
Okay, but unlike metal springs, it's not like a receiver, then?
No, it's not. It's a piece of shielding material, but it's a cloth.
Okay.
And when we test it in our lab, we've got a microwave lab, and we actually have 2 calibrated antennas that shoot. One shoots microwaves, and the other one receives it. And we test materials by making a little mitten and putting a mitten over the receiving antenna, and then we measure the amount of attenuation and loss and how much shielding these particular materials give. But in this lady's situation, the very first day that we were there and we wrapped her in it, we put a layer of it under her body on the mattress layer,
right,
and then one over her, she had substantial reduction in this problem.
And felt better, obviously.
Right off the top, right away, she was able to, her heart palpitation problems let up, and the anxiety was released, and she had one of the first good night's sleep that she had in quite a while.
And there's no way a medical doctor would have determined what you found.
Well, I don't know that. I don't think so. Well,
I don't think they say, are you living near towers? I don't think that comes up.
Yeah, people that have electrical hypersensitivity, and there's many people like that. But once again, you know, our brains are electrical systems. Our bodies are regulated by our brains, and any time you interfere with your brain processes, you're interfering with all kinds of potential body problems. She also found from her research that using B12 and folic acid, because she was trying to counter the effect with her knowledge of some of these nutritional remedies, and she found B12, folic acid, because she thinks that these microwaves tend to interfere with your calcium and magnesium absorption. So people that have these kind of problems might take some B12 and some folic acid. And that was one of the things that that we discovered over there. And hopefully she's going to continue to do some of the research that she's doing. I've been taking some of the other victims that we are working with, and we've been having her come up with some programs to try to get them supplements. But the shielding has been a pretty big breakthrough.
This must be going on all around the country.
Well, anywhere you have a cell tower, you have that level of power coming down. And, you know, they're building them right here. This one that went up down, what I'm talking about, it's right smack in a residential area.
And this will look like what?
It looks like a
tree?
This one's a palm tree.
Oh, this one's the palm tree.
It's the palm tree. That's right.
Well, so the upside is they're trying to make it fit the environment. The bad side is there's too many of these things.
Well, yeah, they're a gigantic matrix. We discussed that the last time around, that not only can these things be used for cell communications, but, you know, they are basically microwave broadcast towers saturating areas from every direction.
Can they be used for nefarious purposes?
Well, sure. My view of it is that if there was a national emergency, a Rodney King event or some kind of uprising, that they could switch the source programming from cell phones over to saturating neighborhoods with microwave patterns that would cause people to become disoriented and unable to function.
Or having to have to run home, for example, and stay in your house.
Exactly. Sure, why not? And that's one of the things we're thinking about, but just not the microwave system. We're going to look at satellites as well here shortly. And by the way, there's one other thing that there's two things that you need to know. For people that are suffering like this, and we run into a lot of people that have used aluminum foil to try to cover themselves, and with some success, because aluminum foil to some degree will work.
It is a reflector, right?
All I can tell you this is the easiest way to test something. If you make yourself some kind of shielding, if you take a cell phone inside the shielding, once you're finished with it, take a cell phone inside whatever enclosure you've made to shield yourself from these problems, and have somebody call you. If your cell phone operates,
it's not working.
It's not working. Now, this materials that we have here, if I can take one layer of this little blanket material, and I can put your cell phone inside it, and I can call it, and it will not operate.
It won't run. Okay.
It will not operate. Okay. And that's just the basic simple test that we use to see whether somebody's shielding is working or not in this microwave range. The other thing that I've got now is also I have these little cell detector pens. Some people came up with a little product, and it's a little pen that was normal writing kind of pen.
Yeah.
And built in the top of it is a field strength meter with a LED red light. And when microwave is present, it will light up. So if either somebody's running a cell phone nearby, or you get in a situation where you're close enough to a tower, these things will flash off and let you know that you're in an area where
you better get out.
Yeah, you better get out. Well, you know, the interesting thing is, for those people that are interested, if you look up the information about microwave ovens and what happens to microwave food, you will find that microwave food is extremely bad for you. Basically, what's happening is you're using this klystron tube to oscillate the food. When food gets microwaved, the molecules are resonated at 2.4 gigahertz. That's 2.4 billion times a second.
Right.
And once these things get up to that vibrating frequency, once you shut the microwave off, and of course they tell you don't even stand by a microwave because it's no good for you, but the energy that's coming off the food is what they call secondary emission.
So it's still happening.
Well, it's still 2.4 gigahertz of energy coming off the food.
I wouldn't think that. I would have thought that it would just stop. When the microwave stops, so does the beam.
Well, not really, because the food is still oscillating, and that's why the food is still hot.
Okay.
So you've agitated those molecules at 2.4 billion cycles a second, and what happens is when you do that, you will end up eating the food hot. You will get the secondary emission. It's like eating microwaves. Now, there was a doctor that did research on this, and his name was Dr. Hertel, H-E-R-T-E-L. And if you run that through Google, you'll read his research. But basically, some of the things he found out is that molecules get totally disoriented when you do this to them. You know, unlike human beings that have been heating their food on fire,
right,
and have the molecules in the food vibrate at random speeds because fire heats things more of a white noise kind of oscillation,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm,
which our bodies are accustomed to for billion years of, you know, heating over fire. When you do this microwave, you end up causing the molecules in the water molecules to separate and get in the wrong alignments. And part of the research he showed is that when you start eating food like that, it will interfere with your blood, make your blood contaminated.
That's an amazing study.
It is. You have to read about it. I've got all the details here. We could almost do a show on it. But this guy's original research, he's the Swedish fellow from Sweden, and the industry asked him to do the research, and he came back with negative results, and they tried to shut down the report.
Are these microwaves any better now than they were 20 years ago?
Well, I took my microwave out to the dumpster in 1980.
And never put one back in?
No, because I just, if you read the research, it's just too unhelpful. And, you know, in America, digestive tract cancer is what, number two?
I think. Well, as a matter of fact, cancers in general just passed up heart disease for deaths in this country.
No, I knew it was something like that. But, you know, colon cancer and digestive tract cancer and all that, and I know I'm no medical expert.
When they started building these devices, Roger, did any scientists say, this isn't going to work?
I think the first ones were built by the Germans. And they basically built them for the military to be able to heat food out on the battlefields for the troops. And of course, you know, military, they don't really care much about quality. They just want the expedience.
They just need it quick and fast, and off they go.
Exactly. Okay, so anyway, let's jump back to one other breakthrough I wanted to tell you about that's really kind of important on this. Let's just jump to this for a second. The state of Michigan has passed a law against electronic harassment.
Now, give me your definition again of electronic harassment. It could be anybody, law enforcement, your neighbor, anyone, right?
Well, it's not so much who does it, it's what the nature of it is. In other words, when somebody uses an electronic device to cause harm to you, your person.
All right, if you're getting bugged by a telemarketer, is that electronic harassment?
Well, if it's making you mentally have difficulty, I don't see why not.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Anyway, this is State of Michigan House Bill number 4513, Section 200. And what they said here, they talk about that if you do anything to frighten, terrorize, intimidate, threaten, harass, or injure any person, and by using a harmful electronic or electromagnetic device, which means a device designed to emit or radiate, or that as a result of its design emits, radiates an electronic or electromagnetic pulse, current, beam, signal, or microwave that is intended to cause harm to others, that's an illegal activity. So that's a pretty big breakthrough.
That is pretty dramatic.
Well, you know, this law didn't exist when you and I talked about in the last show a year and a half ago.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure what their legislative intent is on this. I haven't actually read more than just the bill itself. But the point is, obviously, one state feels that this is a problem. And of course, this thing also covers anybody using chemical irritant devices or any other harmful biological device. So it covers biological and chemicals as well.
When an individual goes nuts and kills people and claims that God told him to or he heard voices in his ear, most of us would say this person's insane, either needs to be treated or put away, but there's something wrong. But answer this for us, Roger. What are the possibilities that he's really hearing someone telling him to do this?
Well, I've been convinced by some of the people that I'm dealing with that they're hearing the same sources because they tend to talk about the same kind of techniques of voices and that kind of thing.
And what are they hearing?
Well, a lot of times people are just hearing things that are degrading. But other times people are actually given missions to do things. And, you know, and of course, some of the real radical ones, people are actually being told to kill themselves. And you and I had discussed that one woman that had drowned her children that was hearing voices. I don't,
Andrea Yates.
Yeah,
right? Yeah,
I remember that one. And then you were saying it was kind of odd that, her husband was involved with a former government contractor, if I remember right. But anyway, getting back to it, if in fact, let's say we are, we had discussed in the last show that this bill was, that the government had put on the books, you know, this Title 50, Chapter 32, Section 1520A, which allows the government to do bioweapons experiments on the citizens, and they basically said that the people had to volunteer with the exception of any law enforcement purpose. So that being on the books, and of course we had it removed for a period of time, and then it reappeared in a military appropriations bill back in 1997 or 8. And we never could quite get the feel for why the government and the government contractors needed this ability to do bioweapons experiments on the citizens. But you can see, if in fact you're developing something like a cell tower system to be able to calm the general population, then who are you going to test it on? You're obviously not going to go to the prisons and test it on people there, because they're not in that environment where you're going to be able to really do a civilian kind of test.
Do you think this technology is being developed, has been developed for two purposes? One, for the obvious, for the phone, for whatever, but also then for control?
Of course. Yeah, control is certainly something that, and you know, the since this 9/11 thing, the control thing is really getting weird. I mean, you look at these legislations. You know, I've got the Patriot 2 information sitting here right in front of me, in case you want to take a look at some of this Patriot 2 stuff that they still want to get put through. But it's pretty draconian, and also it crushes the Fourth and Fifth Amendments. It's, you know, the first Patriot Act did enough damage, and the second one, and of course, they're trying to do it piecemeal, and they're taking it and doing it bits and pieces. They just,
You know, the old saying, if you're going to boil a frog, you don't turn up the heat right away, you just kind of simmer him, and then he's cooked and doesn't even know it.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. As a matter of fact, they passed that one thing last week that had to do with this starting to get this national ID put into operation.
Right.
And that was, that was under the National Intelligence Reform and Terrorism Act, I think was the one that did it. And they started, and they want to be able to put all the bio information, all your fingerprints and facial images and some of the other bio parameters on there as well.
What would George Orwell say today?
Well, you know, I've got some George Orwell to talk about here, because he's relevant. You know, the 1984 prophecies, which is really what they were, are really coming to fruition. And we can take a minute to. I've got a couple passages of George Orwell that I'm gonna want to read to you if we have the time to do it.
I've got about 30 seconds right now.
30 seconds. Well, that's not enough to do it there.
We'll
if you got 30 seconds, let me tell you, I got my book that's about a third done.
Go ahead.
It's going to be called Bug Sweeper: The Adventures of a Hollywood Electronic Private Eye. And it's going to be all these stories that I've got. As a matter of fact, I just reviewed, and I've been writing this stuff, and I was totally crazy 20 years ago.
And where's it going to be available?
Probably not for another 6 months or so, but I want to let you know that we're writing it. We're getting all the adventures down and a lot of the stories that we've covered with you in the past. And if we get a chance tonight, I'm going to take you over to the Howard Hughes information, where I ended up building that famous movie projection system that was on top of the Desert Inn.
You did that.
I'm the guy.
All right. We're going to talk more about that. And also, I want you to talk about these microchips and implanted individuals when we come back, Roger, because there's a lot of people walking around with implants and they don't even know it. I'm George Norrie, back in a moment. Roger, let's continue with your stories that you did not have time for before the break.
Okay, before we jump back on the finish up the harassment page, I had an individual over Christmas gave me a copy of this little sticker. It's a picture of a TV set with a man's silhouette with a question mark, and under it says, "The brainwashed never wonder."
How true.
Okay, jumping back on the harassment page there, I hope you still have it up on your computer.
Uh-huh.
We moved down to the microchips, pictures of the microchips, and of course, since I last talked to you, these microchips that they're using now have been allowed by the FDA. And that particular company down there that was making them now is implanting them in people. And
Applied Digital, I think, right?
Applied Digital Solutions, yeah. Right. Yeah. They, Digital Angel. And now the FDA says, go, and I guess that I had heard all kinds of crazy stories about people putting him in so they could get into exclusive nightclubs, but
that's going on in Barcelona, Spain.
Yeah, and that's something. And then also, government officials can access only certain levels of information on computers with him as well.
And a lot of that happening in Mexico, where the attorney general there of that country has got his staff all implanted.
Well. I don't know. You and I discussed that in detail on the last show, so we'll just keep moving forward on the new information.
What fascinates me, Roger, about this is, and I don't know if this is a hoax, a myth, or if this is real, but on the website you've got a picture of a sniper gun that purportedly can shoot implants into people and they can barely even feel it.
Right. Well, basically, when this thing came out, there was some discussion about it being urban legend. And somebody had come to me and said, you know, we don't think this is for real. But basically, we were concerned with the fact that this kind of technology could be developed and could be present. So we figured we would include it so that if anybody has an instance or a circumstance where they felt like they got a bee sting, and next thing you know, they've got something under their skin, that this something we think that even if it is not correct and not true at this time, we figure it's a developmental possibility. So we went forward and reproduced the information because this was supposed to be developed for the Beijing China police in 2002 kind of thing. So sometimes we'll take things that we're not totally sure about, but if they seem viable, we'd rather put them out there and let people have some idea and also take the feedback from people that may be in the know about it. We may have somebody, you know, come to us and confide in us, you know, this thing is in development at this point. So sometimes we'll just go with it just because it's better to think about it and have it out there rather than exclude it from the information.
Okay, I understand.
Yeah. Moving on, these are laser harassment devices. Next down, pictures down, laser gun sight set up there so that you could actually fire a laser at a very long distance.
Is this what could be happening to pilots?
Well, it very well could be the same kind of lasers. Yeah, that's recently been in the news, and the FBI got extremely upset about it and went and took some people out just to make the point. And, of course, it is very dangerous when you start firing these things at people that are running aircraft and motor vehicles mm-hmm. and that kind of thing. But those are the actual pictures of a couple of versions of what that is. Now, we have people that get laser harassment. They get people coming around their neighborhoods and using lasers from a car, and we'll light up their window shades at night and put the beams through the cracks of their windows. And if somebody does that to you, and it's enough times around, it's pretty unnerving. And we do have reports of that as being a part of a harassment. The next picture down is this hat that we still have not gotten any feedback. We had one client that had this hat tossed in the back of her car. And the hat, the symbol in the hat is a man with his head popped open on a hinge with a microwave antenna coming out. And embroidered in the back of the hat, it says, "We deny we exist." We still, you know, I've had this on the net, on the internet, and I talked to Art Bell about it as well, put it out there on that show. We still have not anybody come back saying that they know what this is about.
Right.
So we still have it up there, and hopefully somewhere along the line someone will come forward and tell us whether that is a covert operation of some kind.
Or just some clever person.
Well, they went to the point of making some hats up. We think that's pretty strange.
Yeah.
But this individual was didn't find it funny because she was having a lot of other problems happening at the same time. And then following that is personal tracking recovery information about the patents for chips, the microchips mm-hmm. that will allow you to be tracked by the satellites. And then following the next thing is the new pictures. These are some new pictures that we have there of this Iridium satellite system. And basically the satellite that you see there is one of 77 satellites that are in stationary orbit around the Earth. And the diagram below it is the actual coverage that these 77 satellites...
It's the whole planet.
It is the whole planet. It's basically a matrix similar to the cell system.
Mm-hmm.
And the interesting part of the story here is you may recall in the last show that I had with you, the next following month or so, we were going to have a victims meeting in up near Sacramento, California.
Right, exactly.
And we had that meeting, and we were out in the countryside. They had it at a small church that was out in the middle of fields, and there was nothing around it. And we had about 150, 200 people there, and I had my machinery running just because I monitor those events to see if there's anything going to occur, and we all started to get hit by an energy beam. Everybody started getting headaches, and I threw the machines into operation, and I'm seeing this microwave frequency coming down. And I ran outside and grabbed my binoculars, and I'm looking the whole horizon. There is not a cell tower. There's not an unknown vehicle. There's nothing within miles around to look at. And at that point, we pretty much figured out that we were being hit by some kind of satellite wave. And then we started to move forward. Now, the interesting part about this Iridium system is that it was originally put up in space by a private company that was trying to link cell phones, that have cell phone operations with this thing. And then they went out of business. They were unable to continue, and the Department of Defense took over the system.
Uh-huh.
So you got 77 satellites flying up there, and they have the ability to send microwave transmissions down to these areas and those coverage patterns right there.
What are some of the symptoms of getting bombarded by electronic radiation?
Okay, symptoms may include, but are not limited to, headaches, eye irritation, dizziness, nausea, skin rash, facial swelling, weakness, fatigue, pain in the joints and muscles, buzzing, ringing in the ears, skin numbness, abdominal pressure and pain, breathing difficulty, irregular heartbeat like Frida had, the lady over there in Colorado. Sometimes people get sexual stimulation. They actually get sexually attacked. We've got many women that have they're sexually assaulted by energy weapons. Some people hear voices, paralysis, balance problems, body or muscle spasm, convulsions, depression, difficulty in concentrating, that's a typical one. Seizures, sleep disturbances, also similar to what we were talking about there. And memory problems. So there's a whole list of difficulties that you can have if you're being hit with any of these microwave or other multiplexed energies.
You know, some days you wake up, Roger, and you just don't feel yourself. You know, you don't know what it is. You know you're not sick. You know, you don't have a cold or anything like that. You're just not yourself. And then other days, I mean, you're sky high. You feel great. You're on an emotional high. Does that have anything to do with this? I mean, is it one day perhaps we're getting bombarded, the machines are on, the towers are running big, and they affect you, and then the next day, maybe they're not turned on, maybe the power's not as strong as it was the day before, and you go back to your normal, jovial self?
Well, you know, the thing about it, I would say if you were to have a day where this stuff would lighten up, it would most likely be a Sunday. Basically, you don't have people commuting, you don't have that cell massive cell activity that you have during commutes and other times. And you may find Sundays are going to be a calmer day for anybody that has these kind of difficulties. So that may be one way to make a determination of whether you've got that. It's hard to say if you've got these towers. We have people that are moving at this point. We have several clients that we're living in areas where we made these measurements and they no longer can stand it. And their houses are up for sale, and they're moving out of those particular locations.
And I guess they have to disclose why they're moving like that or not?
Well, no. They're just moving. Now, one of the things that we did is I found a hotel here in California that's kind of up north, that's in an area that's just outside the national parks, and it's totally void of microwaves. You go up there, and you can't make cell phones work, and nothing's working up there. It's, you know, I've done spectrum analysis up there. It's a particularly dead area. And sometimes I will send clients up there for a weekend just to tell me whether they get relief. And it's interesting to go to test areas where you can get, you know, even now it's hard to get away from microwave towers because if you aren't any near any major highway, you're going to get microwave links coming down. But this particular place was extremely void of any kind of a energy like that. And so I've been sending certain people up there for a few days to see if, in fact, they'll get relief just by being there. And if the case is that they do, then we pretty much know that they're getting blasted at the location where they're living.
Is this happening worldwide or just in this country?
No, it's worldwide. We get calls from all over the world. Every country you can think of, every continent, even obscure places. But you know, as long as the cell systems are operating and there's microwave links taking place, then you're going to have these kind of interferences with your mental capacities. You might recall in that last show, the one that I did with you, we discussed that technical paper that had been released that basically showed the old levels of microwave transmission power that used to deal just with heating up the body surfaces were no longer really viable, in the sense that now they're finding that much lower levels of microwave power will interfere with your brain capacities. So that's one of the things that's happening is we're
well, what can we do about all this thing?
Electrosmog. It's almost like the air pollution. What can you do? You have to actually find yourself moving to another location, or you can do like several of the people that can't leave and try to shield yourself up with some of these materials that we've got.
I mean, do you see the day one day where roofing materials may include shielding like this and it'll be all over the place?
It's possible, but we're using some of that material right now to make curtains facing in the direction of the new cell tower. We've got pretty thick walls in this location where we are here, but we're now going to cover the windows with this microwave reflecting.
All right, what good is that, though, because, the window's next to the wall, you know?
Well, these particular walls, we have some 18-inch thick walls in this particular structure, so the windows are the weak point, the leakage points. But, one way to tell, we'll get everything hung. We'll turn on the cell phone.
Get your meters out there.
Well, we can do it that way as well, but the simple test is to turn on your cell phone and see if it links, and if it doesn't link, then you're in a pretty good shielded position. And if in fact it does work and the quality of the call is adequate, then you're not really making any headway.
If you wrapped your cell phone in aluminum foil, could you call it? Would it work?
Oh, the last time I tried it did not work. I used some pretty heavy-duty foil that we got. I couldn't tell you the actual milk.
Or you wrap it up a couple times.
No, we just wrapped it up once, and actually it managed to stop it. So silver foil, these people that have been talking about making beanie hats and sleeping enclosures with silver foil, there's some merit to it.
Exactly. You can't laugh at them.
Yeah, and you can try it for yourself. Anybody can try it. I've tried it with all kinds of different cell phones on this metallized cloth that we use for this stuff, and it does knock it down. And we're very pleased with the results that we've had. We've had people actually build it into the linings of their hats and wear their hats all day long to protect their heads, people that actually live close to these microwave systems. It's all cumulative. If you're actually in this microwave transmission path and your home is there and you're there all day long, this whole thing tends to become cumulative.
When you were talking about George Bush hearing voices, was he aware that there was nobody in the room talking, or did he think it was actually one of his cabinet members, someone saying something to him? And I also think during the debates, didn't he say something about, "I'm not finished talking yet," and no one was talking? Nobody interrupted him?
I had heard that story as well. I just hope that we really don't have a Manchurian candidate.
Oh, now that's a bizarre thought.
Well, you saw the movie, and you saw their intent. Their intent was to implant this individual that they were going to place in the presidency. And this movie was written a long time. The original was Frank Sinatra, remember? It wasn't particularly an implant in that original storyline, but the whole idea of the mind control was.
Wouldn't that be something?
Yeah. By the way, I wanted to mention one other thing. I read in the newspaper today. Do you remember Carnivore? That was this FBI spying software,
which they're dumping now.
They were unable to get it working correctly. They spent $15 million on it.
It's junk. It's dated. It doesn't work.
It didn't work.
Yeah,
it was actually a computer system that they would go into an ISP.
It was going to allow them all to talk with each other, right?
Well, no.
Share information.
What it was for was that if they wanted to spy on George Norrie's email, they would go to your server, whoever your server is, and they would go in with a warrant, and they would bring in with them this whole central processing unit, a tower and all the associated gear, and they would force the ISP to run their email channels through your piece of equipment.
Well, let me tell you, Roger, if they want to get to the 2,000 emails I get a day and look at them first and help me out, they're more than welcome.
But anyway, the uproar was that the fact that the FBI would bring in this machine, it was in a cage. They would actually set this machine inside the networking area of these ISPs, and it would be in a metal cage, and it would force them to feed their data flow through these things. And these things would be looking at everybody's email, supposedly only taking out George Norrie's email and nobody else's, but still it was reading and had the ability. Unlike the old days where if they had a warrant for a lawful wiretap and they went to the phone company would put them on George Norrie's phone. Nobody else's phone was involved. But you see, when you're dealing with a flow, packet flow, of data that's in a typical network, ISP network, everybody's packets are flowing together.
Did you ever get the Men in Black to visit you?
Yes. As a matter of fact, we've had a few visits. I want to tell you about a really interesting visit that happened recently with one of my clients. About a month ago, I had one of my clients, and he's a political activist. He gets himself involved with being politically active, but once again, he's within his rights, First Amendment rights, to exchange information and all that. He's not plotting against the government, and he's not doing anything like that, but he's a political activist. Anyway, this individual, and also he's a very skilled computer software designer. He himself was over in a library in Southern California,
Okay. And
he was plugged into the network in the library, and he likes to go to the library sometimes, and he exchanges information and does this stuff there. About a month or so ago, he's in the library, and three people show up, two of them in suits, and one police officer of the local police department. And he said he was watching them because they went up to the library and talked for a minute. And then they went over to this table where he was, and the police officer pulled out his gun. The other guys grabbed him and took him outside, unhooked his computer, and went out to a white van. One individual showed him identification, saying that he was part of the Homeland Security. And said that they had some information that he was receiving emails that had to do with terrorism. Now, this guy's an average kind of guy, and somebody pulls a gun on him and drags you out of a library, and they open this van up, and the van is a technical van. It's got all this computer interface gear there. So while they're talking to him, this one guy takes his laptop, and he plugs it into a box. And what happened was is they downloaded his whole hard drive.
They took the whole thing, yeah.
Right smack, right then and there, the whole hard drive. And they told him what they were doing was they were scanning for a particular piece of email that was supposed to be something that had to do with a terrorist.
Now, did he get terrorist-related emails, even though you say he was not one?
Well, he's told me that that he had email that was forwarded on networks of different networks he's in, and he gets enclosures of people sending things back and forth. So he said, yeah, it's possible that he did get something like that, but, you know, it wasn't the kind of thing where he was an ongoing plotter of any
right.
kind of, you know, this just happens to be, when you're on the Internet, and you probably know this from your own surfing, that if you're a politically active individual, you go to a lot of websites a lot of times just to check them out to see what they're talking about.
Well, and what's amazing is they found him.
Well, the thing is they actually had a photograph of him that they had taken off a website for a software manufacturer that he actually worked for. So they obviously had been looking into the guy. But here's the thing that you really need to think about. If, in fact, his computer is considered his personal papers, then why wasn't there a warrant involved?
Oh, right. Good point. Stay with us, Roger. Back in a moment, we'll talk more. I want to get into that Howard Hughes movie projector that you developed as well, and phone calls. If you have a question for Roger Tulsis, we'll be back. Our guest is Roger Tulsis. And, Roger, before we go to the phones, and the lines are jammed worldwide for you tonight, you really invented the movie projector system? Tell me about this.
Well, here's the story. But let's go to the website and have a look at the Howard Hughes pictures.
Okay.
That's the link there, the one that says Howard_Hughes.html. And do you have that link
yep,
up?
Yep, that's linked up right under your name again on our website.
So punch that up, and you should see a picture of Howard standing in front of one of his racing airplanes, which was the Northrop Gamma
yep,
monoplane.
He's right under the propeller.
And that's the one where he established the cross-country speed record between Burbank and California, or from Burbank to Newark, New Jersey, 7 hours, 28 minutes on January 19 in 1937. And that, by the way, is an autographed picture. You see the autograph on the right
yeah,
side?
Yeah, sure do.
Yeah. Now, the next frame under that is his business card. That's Howard Hughes' actual business card. Hughes Aircraft Division, actually he had a 7000 Romaine address was his Hollywood address because he was, you know, he had had RKO during the 40s where he made all his motion pictures.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
In 1968, I was working for a company called Magnetic TVI, and that's my business card right there. And I was a sales technician that specialized in professional audio gear. And one day, I got called back by my boss. He said, there's a special individual here that needs something right away. You got to come back to the office. So I did. And when I got there, there was a very distinguished man with a very, you know, beautiful tailored suit, gold vest. He kind of looked like a butler. And he greeted me, and he was Howard Hughes' personal assistant. His name was Norman Love. And my boss said that, you know, let's take extra fine care of these people because the Hughes organization mm-hmm. was a very big
sure.
client. So he brought a motion picture projector with him. The next frame is the picture of the actual location, that Magnetic Audio Video, Magnetic TVI, and they were on La Brea, right across from Pink's famous hot dogs.
I've seen that hot dog stand.
You know, the building's still there.
Yeah.
Okay, so anyway, he brought this projector, and if you look at this next picture, this is a picture of the Graflex 16mm projector that he brought. This is not the exact one. This is a replica picture that I was able to find of that particular machine.
Okay.
But anyway, Graflex was a company that was in Hollywood, and they brought the 16mm projector to me, and they said that we needed to interface a sound system that would be large enough because Howard Hughes had a bad hearing problem. One of his crashes, I think it was the Beverly Hills crash, where his head had hit the windshield of the aircraft, had ruined his hearing on one side of his head. And so they wanted some very large, powerful sound system so he would have no hearing impairments. And the reason he wanted the 16mm projector is because he had a huge collection of motion pictures at this facility on Romaine. Not only his own RKO movies that he made, but he was a film collector. He loved films. And when he was, at this point, he was up in his, he had moved into the top of the Desert Inn penthouse to recluse himself.
In Vegas.
In Vegas. And he just started buying property and hotels one after another. And he never came out of the hotel. He was surrounded by these personal aides. They had, the elevators were locked off. Nobody could get to that floor. Guards surrounded it. It was video cameras and everything. And he, all the windows were blocked out with silver foil. And you'll see some further pictures coming up of what he looked like at the time.
I mean, at what point in his career, or life, I mean, did he just wake up one day and say, I never want to see any other human being again other than a few staff people?
Well, that's basically the way it happened. He ended up becoming a bit paranoid about the germs. And as he got more eccentric and more reclusive, he also had sold the TWA, and he had $500 million cash on hand. And there was a lot of litigations, and he had gotten into headbutting with the government as well. He had been called in front of the Congress to answer questions about the Spruce Goose and other covert projects. And he was heavily involved in building stuff for the CIA as well.
Right.
And
yeah.
And then, of course, you know, he had the Hughes aircraft and all that other stuff, and he had gotten in a hassle with the government because they wanted to tax the heck out of Hughes aircraft. So he gave it to a medical facility. He created a trust. And now that medical facility, there was a CBS 60-minute show on it, has about $16 billion or something, and they're one of the leading medical facilities. And he just put the Hughes aircraft in that trust just to keep the government from
attaching it. Huh?
From taxing the heck out of it. So anyway, the next pictures are, I decided to give this guy a sound system that would knock the ninth floor apart. And this is a picture of the original Macintosh amplifier. And then the speakers, look at the size of these speakers. These were the studio speakers that we were using over at CBS Records. I mean, the rock and rollers like Sly Stone and the rest of these people, we were blasting. These were the monitors that we were using at CBS at the time.
So
I was over at CBS Records. And they're quite large. They're 2.5 feet by 2.5 feet.
Oh, sure.
And then the power amp there, it was probably about 30, 40 watts, I think I spec'd it in there. But believe me, this system would rattle the chandeliers. And later on, when I talked to some of the guys that are still alive that were his personal aides, he said that they literally had nobody under the floor, in the next floor down, because he played it so loud.
It reverberated the whole floor.
Well, it would shook the whole place.
Yeah.
So anyway, I had a lot of trouble wiring this thing up. That was the real trick, because every time I tried to interface between these special outputs on the projector, I couldn't get this hum. There was a hum in it. And luckily, I had a... at the time, I was going to Lockheed apprenticeship program, and I had an instructor, Marty Ross, and I got him on the phone. I said, "You got to dig me out. I can't get this thing working." And he managed to figure something over the phone. And I got a $50 tip from Howard Hughes. I mean,
did you have to go to the desert in it and install this?
No, I didn't. They basically had it all set for them, and they
just took it away.
They had two football-sized players, and they had a waiting aircraft, and they swooped it off. And as we get down to the pictures here now, here's the pictures of exactly where it went. This is the Desert Inn Hotel where Howard Hughes reclused himself from November 1966 to 1970. The arrow there shows you the exact penthouse location. And then Gordon Margolis, who is Howard Hughes' personal aide, and Gordon's still alive, and he's over in the Las Vegas area. He told me that Howard Hughes used to play the movie system so loud it would rumble the whole ninth floor. They had to keep the floor, like I said,
was his hearing that bad?
Yeah, it was. It was that bad, but it was selective. A lot of times, when he didn't want to hear people, he just shut them off.
Yeah,
but yeah, it was that bad. And he drove the guys that took care of him. He drove him crazy because he would watch the same movies over and over. Now here's a drawing based on Gordon's firsthand description. This is what Howard Hughes looked like when he was sitting around looking at this movie.
Well, describe it. Some people who don't have a computer.
Well, first of all, he looks like a man that was stranded on an island out in the Pacific.
Yeah.
He's got all the straggly growth, and he's laying there naked, and he would lay on a cot that you use, like, you know, for suntanning kind of cot.
Mm-hmm.
And he would lay on paper towels because he was paranoid about
germs and things.
But he would be nude. He would literally lay there nude. And these bottles that are under him, he would urinate in the bottles because he didn't want to go to the bathroom.
He didn't want to get up.
He didn't want to get up. And the next frame is him looking at his favorite movie. His favorite movie was Ice Station Zebra with Rock Hudson. And next time we get together, I'll tell you about the night that I was at Rock Hudson's house when he passed away. I was there at the time that Rock passed away.
Well, he would have loved DVDs now, wouldn't he have?
Oh, he would have.
These flat screen TVs.
He would have, yeah. Anyway, here's a picture of Howard Hughes watching Ice Station Zebra, which was his favorite movie. And I think what was his favorite is here these guys went under the ice in this submarine, and there was probably not that many germs.
Yeah, yeah.
So maybe that was what. But that was his favorite one. And like I said, he watched it over and over so that all his attendants were hating these movies because they all could recite the soundtrack. Anyway, this is the book that reflects those hidden years.
What a character.
That's another picture of him, all straggly faced and gaunt looking.
When did he die?
He died somewhere around 72, I think. We'll go to that in a minute. Anyway, here's some of the magazines that covered the stories at the time. What happened to Howard Hughes? They show what he used to look like in 39. And what he looked like in 1971, and that was the cover of Look magazine while he was still alive.
Oh, he was a good-looking guy in his day.
Oh, yeah?
You know, stylish,
yeah.
Everything.
Oh, sure, and he dated all the most beautiful ladies.
Yes,
as
he
well.
Did.
Okay, and then here's the next one is the picture of the Newsweek article, April 19th, which dealt with the secret world of Howard Hughes, and this particular article gave a structured breakdown of all the Hughes holdings because...
Mm-hmm.
His holdings were controlled in Las Vegas, were, you know, all five hotels he had an assistant over there. And the amazing part is Robert Mayhew, the guy that worked under him, controlling everything was in Vegas, never met him face-to-face.
Never met him. And ran the business.
He kept him right on the grounds in the hotel below, but he had to talk to him by phone. He never saw the man face-to-face. And I talked to Mr. Mayhew. He's alive as well, and we discussed things briefly. And then on the next one is the picture of the December 13th, 1976 Time magazine. And this is the one with Gordon Margolis. Now, Gordon was the caretaker. It was the only one that could actually
see him,
carry Howard Hughes around because he broke his hip in the 1970s there. And the only person he would allow to carry him is Gordon. And Gordon's still alive, and I'm in touch with Gordon. And then the other one here has a long article about the Hughes during the hidden years because what happened was is there became an inside fight for his empire. The faction in Las Vegas got in conflict with the faction that was back in Hollywood controlling the aircraft company. And what happened on that is they decided to secrete Mr. Hughes in an aircraft when nobody was looking. They snuck him out of the hotel, and they put him in this aircraft. And there should be a picture of the aircraft there. I'm losing kind of track on my paper. But you see the picture of the aircraft that's the jet? That's the aircraft that was sitting. And what they did is they took the aircraft to the, rather than the regular airfield, they took it to Nellis Air Force Base. And they secretly moved him on a stretcher out of the back of the hotel when nobody was looking and put him on the aircraft.
And off he went.
And off he went. Nobody knew where Howard Hughes disappeared to, and then at that point he went down to Bermuda, I think, at that point. And then there was quite, you know, an uproar. And then let's see what happens as we go along here. Then the interesting part story is that he loved his movie projector so much that he insisted on taking the projector and the speakers. So they couldn't even walk in the aircraft aisles because he had loaded up these gigantic speakers in the projector system.
How long was he down in Bermuda?
I don't have that exact...
Because he came back to Vegas and died, didn't he?
No, he actually died down there in that area down there.
Oh, he did?
He did. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, he died down there.
I thought he was in Vegas when he passed.
No, he did not. He actually went down there, and of course, he was down in the Bermuda area for a period of time. Then he actually went to Nicaragua. And then there's a whole map in these books to show how he bounced around down there because he didn't want to come back into the U.S. because of the tax problems.
What amazing. Let's go to the phones. You got a lot of people ready to talk to you. Ready, Raj?
Sure.
Next up, let's go to our West of the Rockies line. You're on Coast to Coast with us. Hi there.
Hello.
Yes, sir.
Do you recognize the name of Georgia Sillo?
No.
Well, I met her when I was running for governor of California in 1982. She was a person who had one of those little devices put in her, and she talked to me because she said she heard me speak and thought I'd be the only person who wouldn't think she was crazy. And this was back in '82, and she said she had taken the numbers of 250 vehicles, 256 vehicles that had followed her at various times, and they were all cold plates. She had a friend who was a private detective. He'd run them, and they all came up cold. She had a very nice home in Manhattan Beach, and they would sit outside of her house and do something electronically, and she would get a pain in her ear, and she knew that they could hear everything she was talking about. And the problem was, she knew that they were involved in Satan worship. They even placed a couple of them in one of the apartments in her very large home that she rented, and she caught them in some rituals and threw them out. And then about 6 months later, somebody else came along and got in there, and they turned out to be within this coven. And they were associated with this organization called Forum 2000 at USC. I don't know if you heard about that.
No.
Well, they were doing some research, and the reason that she got hooked in this was she was going with a fella who was involved, and he knocked her out with something one day on Friday, and she didn't wake up. It was Friday morning, the last she remembered, and she didn't wake up until Monday night.
Mm-hmm.
And she felt this pain in her ear. And so she asked her friend to do some investigation on him, found out he was connected to these, he was demonic. And so the whole thing started that way, but it had something to do with Forum 2000. She did a lot of investigating, et cetera, and she was a top salesperson for IBM. So she had made quite a bit of money, and she spent some money doing research and everything. And so she happened to meet me, and I got her away from them. I set up a process because she was always being tailed. And I got her away one day and got her to a doctor, and they did x-rays, and they found out it was not in her ear. It was in her nose. But when they turn on the equipment, of course, the nose and the ear, you know, the nerves are connected.
Yes.
And so the pain would be reflected in her ear.
Mm-hmm.
But eventually she had the thing removed surgically.
Mm.
Now, and she, I lost touch with her, but her son became, as I understand, a Satanist. He went to Dartmouth, and they were after him all the time. Her son, when I knew her, was about, started out about 12 years old or so, 12, 13 years old, and I lost touch.
Why did they do this to her?
Well, she said they were just using her as this guinea pig, and that because she was going out with this guy that was involved, they decided to use her.
That's amazing. You were, I'm going to guess, the Democratic candidate, one of them?
No, my name's Michael Hurt, and I ran against Duke Majan in the Republican primary.
All right.
And there was
I was going to guess that you were Michael Beasley.
No, Michael Hurt, H-I-R-T.
Okay.
And as a matter of fact, recall the fellow that called you, two, 3 months ago or something, like, about an exorcism was done on Clinton? And
yes.
What happened to Clinton?
Yes, yes.
That's me.
Okay.
I'm a Roman Catholic exorcist now. And so I would like to talk to your guest because there's a way to break this open using exorcism, just to break it in half.
Well, I tell you what, we're rushing up to our commercial break here, but I'm sure you can get a hold of Roger through his web, George Norrie, with Roger Tulsis and your phone calls. Roger, before we go back to the calls, you want to give out any more information about your website, what people can peruse when they get to it?
Yeah, I just want to let you know that I use C. Crane stuff, and it's really great.
Oh, you do? For some of your surveillance?
And I want to let you know I'm also 98% in gold right now.
Are you that much in gold?
You better believe it. You're looking at what's happening with the dollar crashing down, and people think that real estate's going up by 30% because real estate's going up. Hey, Federal Reserve notes are dropping like
yeah,
like
that's true.
Loans, yeah.
Bugsweeps.com, right?
Yeah, bugsweeps.com, and you can certainly email me over there. I expect to get 10 million emails starting tomorrow.
Yes, you are.
And I try to answer every one of them to try to help everybody I can along the way. And other than that, hopefully we'll get a book going here in the next couple of 6 months, and you can read about some of my crazy adventures with all these wild individuals. And
well, maybe it'd turn into a movie, especially you being out here in Los Angeles. You and I need to meet one day, too.
Yeah, it'd be terrific.
Right around the corner.
Yeah.
Wildcard Line, welcome to Coast, you're on the air. Hi there.
Hey, George. How you doing tonight?
We are well, thank you.
This is Jim from Wichita, Kansas,
mm-hmm.
Truck driver.
Hello there, Jim, the truck driver.
Hey, how you doing? Hey, Roger, how you doing tonight?
Good.
Hey, great show. Hey, I got a quick little thing for thought here. With these small implants that they're able to use now, what if in the future when the Antichrist takes power in the world throne, I wonder if this might be a tool that he would use to implement the Mark of the Beast in people.
Well, it's certainly, you know, so this whole issue with Mark of the Beast and the biochips is, if it's prophecy, then it certainly may end up being as negative as they make it out to be. I'm not in favor of it.
But what a way to communicate if you need to control. I mean, you're onto something, Jim, because how many people do you think are walking around now, Roger, with implants? They don't know it.
I can say in the time that I've last talked to you, we've found about 40 of them.
Yeah, so magnify that. When you say you found 40,
yeah,
there could be thousands of people.
There could be. Yeah, there could be. We have test equipment that will test for it.
How are they getting implanted? And they don't even know about it?
Most people either have missing time or they had elective surgery. And as we discussed in the last show, they just have little cuts in their veins, just like as if they had put a stent up in their neck by using that catheter system.
Yes.
And so a lot of times, if it's nothing more than a cut on your leg, why would you figure that you had a chip implanted in the upper part of your body?
You would never even think about it.
Exactly.
First time caller line, you're on with Roger Tulsis. Hi there.
Hi, this is Bonnie, and I'm calling from Fresno.
Hi, Bonnie. Go ahead.
Oh, this is the reason why I started listening to this show. I'd heard for years about Art Bell, but I didn't know where to find him on the radio or when he was on. And finally, someone told me how to find the show, and it had changed by that time to George. But I've been looking for answers for years to some of the things that had been happening to me, and I know so much more about it than I did when I started looking. But there's still things that are a puzzle to me. And I'm glad that Michael came on first, because now you won't think what I have to say is so strange. That I have had a problem with surveillance, and there isn't any legitimate reason for it. The reason is to keep me from getting to court to get the help I need to put a legal end to this. And by constant monitoring, they're able to do this.
Yeah, yeah. Tell what are they doing to you?
Well, for a long time, I knew that my phone was bugged, a long time before the high frequency started being used. But about 95 or early 96, I noticed high frequency. And I didn't understand it at the time, none of it. But I just kept looking for answers. And I know that eavesdropping equipment has been used. But I also know that I'm being monitored every place I go.
I've got to ask you what they're trying to do to you. Why? What's this court case?
I don't think anybody is trying to change anything physically where I'm concerned.
But obviously they need to hear something you're doing or talking to people about.
What they want to do is keep me out of court.
What's the litigation that you might be involved with?
Well, because it's a long story how this got started.
Well, we don't have.
Tell you that corporations are involved in it, and insurance is the excuse. Insurance money is what's being used to do this.
I mean, have you been injured, hurt, anything?
Yes, I was in several accidents, but those are the excuse, not the reason, because nobody should ever have to go through this because they got hit.
All right. The question, Roger, is what does she do to try to stop this? What can she do?
Well,
thanks for the call.
Yeah, generally we would have to meet with a client and find out what kind of elements of harassment are taking place. And if it's some kind of directed energy, we'd actually sneak in her location and try to make measurements and find out exactly what she's getting hit with. But, you know, a lot of times it's easier than paying somebody money is to just eliminate them as being a problem.
Next up, let's go to our East of the Rockies line. You're on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hello, George. Hello, Roger.
Yes, sir.
My name's Jeff. I am currently in Duluth, Minnesota.
Duluth. A very cold Duluth, probably.
Yes, I think that's how we make some of our money here, is exporting the cold. I live in government housing here, an apartment building. It's a high rise. I live on the 13th floor. And, yes, it is actually marked as the 13th.
That's a rarity right there.
Yeah. Well, it's government housing. I guess they don't take the same attitudes towards superstitions. I don't know.
Yeah, you may be right.
Personally, I'm pagan, and, you know, some cultures regard 13 as being lucky, but, of course, that's different subject material for a different time. Thing is, I've lived in this building for 4 years, 9.5 months. I'm actually moving because of other issues here in a couple of weeks, but this building has on top of it, and this is a 14-story building, which is why I mentioned I'm on the 13th floor, we have a cell phone tower on top here.
I can hear it humming in the background.
Oh, no, actually, that's my computer.
Oh, okay.
Sorry. Wrong hum. It's probably somewhere in the neighborhood of, I'm guessing, about 100 straight line feet from where I'm sitting right now. I know that that tower's up there because at one time it actually, they used it for an experimental cellular internet service that we had here locally. It eventually failed. But I was actually one of the subscribers for the service as well.
Is it doing something to you?
Well, I went to your link for, on electronic harassment,
yeah,
just sort of looking through it. And I hit the section with the heading Symptoms of Electronic Radiation Exposure. And, quite frankly,
you've got them, don't you?
Quite frankly, I've got a lot of them on the laundry list. Way too many to even start.
Now, does this, Roger, go away when he moves?
It should go away. The problem is that as these waves start to toast you and interfere with your bioprocesses, your health degrades, your immune system also becomes less efficient, and your health just starts to sink.
Do you recuperate?
Well, it depends on how far gone you are. You know, if your organs have started to have serious problems, then no.
Is it like you're getting cooked from within?
Well, it's more than that in the sense if it interferes with your mental capacities, then it will interfere with your whole chemical balances. And obviously, immune. A lot of times, we have people that are exposed to this stuff, and their white blood cell count is very high because the human body, when it gets hit with microwaves and outside energy, thinks it's being invaded by something.
Now, he said this tower is about 100 feet away from him. That's pretty close, then.
Yeah,
right?
It is. Sure.
Okay.
Yeah.
Wild card line. You're up on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hi.
Yeah. Go ahead, sir.
Yes. I want to know if, what exactly, what is the website you guys are on?
It's called bugsweeps.com, bugsweeps.com, S-W-E-E-P-S.
Okay, and basically that's all I really need to know. And
you got it.
And to leave you with...
Okay, got to run. Thanks. But go to the website, get all the information you need. Next up, let's go to our next wild card line. You're on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hi.
Yeah, go ahead.
Look, my name is Pat. I'm in San Francisco right now. About 20 to 15 years ago, I started having problems with my ears ringing, dizziness, feeling off like my equilibrium was off. This past year, my joints have been driving me crazy, the pains in them. So I want to know where I can get the sheet or curtains. I've tried the, actually my kids think I'm nuts because I took the aluminum foil and made a hat.
Made a hat out of it. A lot of people used to laugh at people like that, but not anymore.
Yeah, just wrap a cell phone up in the foil and you'll find out how good it's working. But we do supply the material. We keep it on hand for people, so she can always contact me at the website, and we'll try to get her set up with some material.
I don't have a computer at all, and I'm definitely computer illiterate.
Well, go to the library. They'll help you. Librarian will help you.
Oh, great.
And just think of bugsweeps.com, okay? B-U-G,
mm-hmm.
And then sweeps.com.
Yeah, either that or just run electronic harassment through the Google search engine, and we'll come up number one.
It is amazing how many people have these bizarre symptoms, Roger.
Well, we are saturated with this stuff. It's just like smog.
So let's say over the last 20 years ago, did we have the kind of symptoms we have today? Probably not.
Probably not. No.
It was bad.
It's really starting about 1980s when they really started to put these towers up. And, you know, unless you happen to be in a telephone T1 link, you know, but now we're saturated. The whole idea of a cell matrix is that all quadrants are covered.
Let's go east of the Rockies. You're up with Roger Tulsis on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hi.
Yeah, go ahead, sir.
Oh, okay. Well, I was just wanting to comment on the actual plugs in people's heads and how they've actually amassed majorities of people to actually do it. The Matrix literally did a video game on it. And literally, they just take the actual video game of the movie that has this stuff in it, and people would massively come into it and get plugged in. And you'd have a mass set of people. They'd already be plugged in, and they'd be online if they had the technology capable of running an internet game like that. And you'd have mass amounts of people plugged in.
Wonder what would happen technically, Roger, if you had millions of people all hooked in mentally. I wonder if you could use that brain power for anything.
Yeah, well, you know, that's a very interesting concept. I think the internet shows us how powerful that can be because a lot of people are hooked in. As a matter of fact, my wife was on the line with some people in Australia for a period of time and made friendships. But these people never see each other. I mean, their spirits are connected and they're becoming friends and they're involved in no intimate things, but they never really physically touch.
Hey, internet dating is getting huge, where mm-hmm. people may never meet each other because they're in different states. Some do, obviously. But, I mean, the computer and the technology is just going faster and faster. And then I, during the break, looked up that company, Cyberkinetics.
Yeah.
And, I mean, they're starting to cut deals with hospitals and things for testing quadriplegic people all over the country.
Yeah, they're probably going to recruit a lot more people. This is going to be very big, very fast. And by the next time I talk to you, which may be another period of time, we may be overwhelmed with what took place in the gap of time.
I may be a cyborg by then.
Yeah, we may have you directly plugged into the gear over there. Yeah.
Wildcard line, you're up. Hi there.
Hi.
Yeah. Go ahead.
Hi, Roger and George. About 3 years ago, I was living in a house that had two stories, and my roommate wanted me to take care of her grandfather because she had to go to town, and mm-hmm. he was downstairs and I was upstairs, so we had a set of walkie-talkies so I could hear him if he needed me. So I went to bed, and I left the walkie-talkie on, and I woke up later that night, and on the walkie-talkie, over and over again, there was a man's voice saying, kill yourself, kill yourself, kill yourself, kill yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And I got totally freaked out, and so I shut it off immediately. The next day, I can't remember who I called, if it was the police or somebody, because I wanted to ask them what I can do about this, because I was really concerned, not just because what was my subconscious taking in, but, you know, baby monitors have to be picking up this.
You might be right. That's true. A lot of people, I know my sister, when she had her little girl, had one of those baby monitors, just to hear the kid in case anything went wrong.
Yeah.
She would have been petrified if she had heard that.
And, I mean, I don't know where it came from, and I don't know, but it was just like a recording almost. And I know that the rear neighbor was kind of a strange, quirky kind of guy, like a hunter, and I think ex-military. He had security cameras on his front of his house and stuff like that. And it just freaked me out. And when you were telling me about people, you know, hearing voices, I mean, I didn't hear a voice. I heard a voice over the walkie-talkie.
What's the motivation, Roger, for people to do this? Now, you were talking about the people who got microwave because they wanted the condo.
Mm-hmm.
But what's the motivation here?
Well, it depends on whether she's a government lab rat on their non-lethal weapons experiments. A lot of people that we get involved with are just basically unwilling subjects of some of these developmental programs.
Wow.
So, especially the people that are getting these voices, because a lot of times the voices will communicate with them. They can talk to the voices hear them, and the voices will say things back. And I have had some people that have been able to get the voices to tell them where they're actually located and what communication centers.
Why do they do that, though?
Why do they do
it? Admit where they are.
Because sometimes these people are so blatant and forward that they don't really seem to care. Or it may just be part of the experiment, and let's disclose in some cases and see what the results are. In other cases, they're not disclosing.
What a story if we could break this, Roger. If we found out that some organization, agency, some arm of government maybe, that they're conducting these experiments on us.
Well, you know, they've been conducting experiments ever since they brought the Nazi scientists over from the concentration camps in Germany under Paperclip. That was the Project Paperclip. And then, of course, they went from that to MK Ultra and all these other things.
And they never stopped. Hey, Roger, we're out of time. Let's keep in touch. There's much more material to go over, huh?
Yeah, we didn't even talk about the two-way hidden modems in these new electronic voting machines. We better get to that at some point.
Well, coming up, I might have you on a roundtable discussion on that when we get together.
Okay.
Thanks, Roger.
Thank you.
Roger Tulsa's website, bugsweeps.com, linked up with coasttocoastam.com. For Steve Carr, Daniel Galante, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean LaDesure, and Art Bell, I'm George Norris.